Rollmonger's Actual Play podcast is proud to present Star Wars Sega Edition, Dawn of Defiance campaign, starring GM Jeff Ball as narrator and game master, with players Matt Witt, Ryan Messina, Aiden Willems, Jay Tamlin, and Frank Hamilton.
Hello everyone, and welcome to episode 1 of Rollmonger's Star Wars RPG podcast. After watching Rogue One, the movie, we were reminded of how a bunch of us gathered in our basements just a few years back, where we are traveling the space lanes of Saga Edition Star Wars. That's right, Saga Edition, 15 books, dead, done, everyone's moved on to the Fantasy Flight game FFG system with pool dice, but why haven't we? Because we never got a chance to play through the Dawn of Defiance campaign, where the players literally get to birth the rebellion, those few first sparks that happened just 3 months after Order 66. Way years before Leia and Luke hit the scene in episode 4. Before the Rebels cartoon storyline occurs, even before Rogue One, the movie itself. Where Bail Organa is not above hiring ne'er-do-wells, heroes, mercenaries, to do some of his dirty work against the Empire. Come to the dark side. But before we get to that, welcome to Rollmonger's Actual Play Podcasts, where we proudly present Star Wars Saga Edition Dawn of Defiance campaign.
The Traitor's Gambit, Episode 1. It is a dark time in the galaxy. The evil Galactic Empire has spread from the deep core to the outer rim, and everywhere the Empire's tyranny can be felt. Fleeing from the oppression of the Emperor's minions, agents of Senator Bail Organa have run to a remote space station above Brentau. Known to be an opponent of the Empire, Organa might be the last hope of freedom in the galaxy. In the hopes of stopping these dissidents before they can reach the Senator, the Empire has alerted its forces on Zelzon Station, where the struggles for liberty rages on, and the first sparks of rebellion have begun to burn. Just so we're clear, these agents of Organa are not you. They are NPCs that pop up in the story. We don't know these people. We don't work for anybody yet. And then we have our heroes. From my left to right on my monitor screen, let me introduce tonight's cast of players. Matt.
Hi, how's everybody doing? I'm Matt. I'll be playing Rahal, shady ex-separatist noble who is kind of reeling after the events of Order 66 and what's happened in the galaxies. He was on the wrong side of the war, so to speak, and he's just trying to catch up with all of his
war
projects and contacts and war profiteering and trying to get it, keep his business rolling.
Hi, I'm Jay. I'll be playing Askeleth. I'm Arcadian. So, yeah, aliens aren't necessarily treated all that well on other planets. He is a scientist slash researcher that happened to have the misfortune of setting out on a journey of discovery at the exact same time as the Empire took over. It just is more difficult to obtain the necessary goods for the research. It's making research a bit difficult, putting it mildly.
All right, I'm Aiden. I will be playing Poser Sham, Sarian Jedi. So Poser was adopted late into the Jedi Academy. As he just started to get into his Jedi training, Order 66 came out. Luckily, he was able to slip away, although watching his master get slaughtered in front of him kind of left him feeling a little harsh towards the world. Not angry, just kind of cold. And so he turned back to his more kind of noble-ish days where he used to play a lot of music and find solace and comfort with heavy metal.
So you're a Padawan whose master suffered Order 66 and you witnessed it.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Ryan, please describe your character.
equivalent of a human flesh block, taking up two squares, wrapped around a duffel bag. It's wearing a uniform standard, nothing that sticks out, great jumpsuit.
And your large size, are you like a Wookiee where you take up a square but are considered large and can handle large things, or do you actually take up four squares?
No, like a Wookiee. Take up more space, and it's more an ego than anything else.
Oh, okay. But not tactically on the game grid. You don't actually take up more squares. You just are a large dude.
Correct.
Okay. When last we left our heroes, all were stranded on the dark, red, dusty planet of Brenthal that sports two overabundant large ice caps top and bottom, making the world look like a rather large 1950s lollipop. The belt in the center, overpopulated, whose cities line crevice walls to stay shaded from the harsh sun. Overcrowded, overpopulated, and now under direct control of the Empire. Stormtroopers, Imperial troops, have garrisoned themselves on the planet's surface, much to the chagrin of the noble families who have enjoyed strong commerce in the galaxy. The planet of Brenthal lies smack dab in the middle of the hyperspace trade lanes of the Hyderian Way and the Parsilim trade route, making the noble families that control this planet wealthy beyond measure. They are not thrilled that the Empire has taken over control of policing the planet, but hesitant to give up their wealth, their holdings, they stay making some sort of deal with this new Empire that has risen from the Clone Wars. And as you can see here, Brenthal seems to be the center of everything in this sector, bordering on the Bormira sector and the DARPA sector, because two major hypergalactic space lanes converge right next to the planet Brenthal. And that is what's made it commerce palooza, as it were. So, scoundrels, underworldlings, legitimate traders, merchants, and especially anyone that is alien are finding themselves in despair. The Empire does not seem to have room for them. Legitimate business owners, especially ones owned by aliens, are finding themselves hedged out. So there are as many people trying to leave the planet as there is trade coming in. Seemingly motionless among a sea of starships and satellites above the twinkling world of Brenthal, Zelzon Station grows larger in your view every second. The central pylon forms the bulk of the station's mass, and three landing platforms leading to docking bays extend from the central station, equidistant from one another and jutting into space. The top dorsal side of the station features a disc-shaped secondary structure, on top of which blinking lights indicate the presence of a landing platform reserved only for wealthy patrons. Zelzon Station is one of over a dozen of the XQ-2 space platforms that are in orbit around Brenthal, manufactured by Bengal Shipbuilders. This particular one that we are rapidly closing on seems to be a little bit in disrepair. Old, rusted plates, some indicator lights around the station flashing at random intervals, but the perfect place to possibly be a last stop to refuel, resupply, find a ship, find transport, find allies, and find a way into the unknown regions or away from the core worlds, and hopefully away from the new Empire's grip over your lives. Gentlemen, you are all seated upon a public transport shuttle, flight number 1H23. It is packed with cargo, aliens, flora, fauna, animals, everything you could think of that could be legally placed on said shuttle and bound for Zelzon Station for reasons known only to its occupants. You are approached by someone that is crew, and they are just doing a last-minute check to make sure that people, passengers, and gear are stowed, and a couple of quick tips on landing procedures, customs. This crew member, who shall remain nameless, walks with a glazed overlook in his eyes, someone that has been in space too long to care about anything or the dangers beyond an airlock, is going about repeating what is coming over the intercom, which breaks and crackles.
This is your captain speaking. We're making our final approach to Zelzon Station. Please secure all personal items, companions, flora, fauna, and weaponry. We will try to dock with the further platform. Thank you.
The gentleman going around sort of making eye contact with each of you, nodding, pointing at personal items that perhaps the crew feel aren't stowed properly, and making motions at you of where to tuck it or place it. So going around the room, starting with Rawl, what does this gentleman see?
He sees an extremely well-dressed, but very, very short individual, but what he lacks in stature, he definitely makes up in sheer bravado and machismo.
Machismo. That's a great last name, or, you know, something that you can say your suit was by machismo. Are you human, alien?
I am human.
Okay.
And as per my earlier description, I'm a shady fellow. You know, I look very weaselly. I'm the kind of guy that you'd see in one of those Quentin Tarantino movies, Usual Suspects or something like that. You know, like, you can definitely tell that I am not on the up and up, and I exude that. But on the same token, I have the ability to basically talk or lie my way through just about any situation. So, he just sees a very well-dressed businessman, and I say businessman with the whole air quotes.
Every time you describe your character, that
easy on the polyesters, guy.
That's what I see in my head.
That sounds pretty appropriate. Yes, I'm very rodent-esque in my appearance with okay. The, you know, and I tend to, when left on my own devices, I don't exactly have nervous twitches, but I definitely, you know, I'm taking a look around at my, doing the whole Mr. Burns hand rub thing while I contemplate ways that I can make
crinkle
money
your nose as you look down.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Merrick, about the bag. He's looking you over because you're just too big to be a regular human, but there's so many near humans in the galaxy. Every size, shape, and slight thing that just makes you a little bit more than human.
This is my bag. Your racks and seats are insufficient. It only has small effects on.
He's sort of avoiding direct eye contact with the muscular large fellow. Ate his Wheaties and his proteins, deciding not to point out the fact that your gear is jutting out into the walkway, sidestepping around that. The gentleman comes upon Askeleth.
So he comes upon a white-haired, apparently white-eyed individual wearing a fancy black vest and holding a scarf up, or holding like a cloth of some sort up to his face. The other hand is working with a data pad that is on his legs. Okay. He looks up at the approaching person and is extremely disgusted. Do you have anything new to tell me?
Only what the captain just said.
Then you don't have anything new. Thank you.
He just shakes his head and keeps going. Next we come across Poser Sham.
Poser is kind of leaning back, holding his guitar case.
He's regarding you. He's trying to decide as he tilts his head as you clutch a large guitar case between your knees and hands, clutching it to yourself tightly, if it's sort of technically, you know, it's not in the way of anything, but it's not exactly like put away.
Just kind of resting his hands on top of it. When you look at him, he's got kind of like ripped up jeans and like a tight black t-shirt. He's got the neck band, the black choker, piercings, a lot on the ears, one or two on the nose, and one on the lip, just on the side. Very heavy eye makeup, all black. So yeah, as a Sarian, he looks fairly human, but he's got the distinctive cone-shaped head. They just keep going and going. Yeah, and so to the side of him, while he's got his guitar case he's holding on to, he also has a black duffel bag, kind of, the strap is like wrapped around his leg, pushed to the side.
When offered a six-pack of beers, you open all six simultaneously and drink them straight, still attached to the plastic ringlets?
No, he's trying to stay sober at the moment. Gonna make it past customs before he starts drinking.
Sorry, I had to tap the Dan Aykroyd Saturday Night Live reference of the Coneheads, the aliens that were trying to blend in and they did weird stuff, and that's how they drank beer, is they'd open all six and just hold it right up to their face. So, deciding not to mess with you, moving on, the guitar case is out of the way enough, decides to end his inspection and, you know, head back into the main cabin. By this time, your attention taken away from the side portals, looking back out, we see the space station in very, very close proximity. The endless approach. Now comes the wait, the maneuvering, the landing, the hustle and bustle of people getting up to stretch, even though they haven't opened the doors of the main shuttle. And finally, being able to turn on your personal communicators once again, getting your bags. You guys are let out into a large chamber, which has the blue fluorescent light rim force field, our little shuttle just inside of that, that holds back the air pressure within and holds back the vacuum of space, with several other ships of varying sizes, all in a very, very large open rectangular space, and a single average height human custom agent trying to draw himself up as straight and as portent looking possible approaches. Stout little portly cap, wearing the dark gray imperial uniform, only a couple of tiny little chiclet blue and red colored insignia on his chest, marking his relatively low rank. The rest of the crew are sort of herding you guys into a waiting area that's painted. Quite literally, you guys are sort of brought out the ramp and asked to sort of stand in front of a bunch of crates, which is an open waiting area, and you guys are standing there with your bags. They're all lined up in a nice little row. They deal with all the humans first. Random passenger, skip the alien, random passenger, inspection, get them open the bag, has a quick peek inside, right, off you go, that kind of thing. The Imperial Inspector comes over to Rawl, looking down, not even taking his eyes up off of his data pad. Do you have anything to declare?
No, sir. Nothing at all.
This package at your feet, this is your personal property?
Sure is.
What does your guy actually carry? Can you describe the package to us?
It's a suitcase.
Just a regular suitcase?
Just, yeah.
Okay. He finally looks up at you. Open it.
I bend over and I unzip the case and it just... You know, it shows all he would be able to see without really looking is really nice clothes, silk ties, nice shirts,
okay,
pinstripe suits.
Seeing your fashion sense repeated tenfold and folded in a case does not seem to please him, but he seems to have no interest in exploring the polyesters and just kind of sighs heavily and says, "That's enough."
And then I'll reach into my pocket and pull out a cred chit,
mm-hmm,
grab his hand and be like, "And by the way, my name's Rahal. It's a pleasure to meet you." And 100 creds slapped into his hand. And I'll point over to Merrick. "This is my personal bodyguard. If you could please treat him with all due respect, it would be greatly appreciated."
He raises an eyebrow at you, flips over the cred chit, reads the numbers, gives you a nod like he understands where we're going with this, and sort of breaks into a slimy smile saying, "You know, the Empire, you know, welcomes you." And he looks over finally as he's about to get launched into this acceptance and sees Merrick, who is just too big to be a man, as human as he looks. And he frowns, keeps the cred shit, but looks back at you sideways. He says, "The Empire will decide who will be treated with respect." And he shuffles over to Merrick. It's a long pause, looking up and down. Sees the duffel bag, reaches out a hand, and is about to point at the duffel bag, like to get Merrick to open it. And out of nowhere, like literally full bore running, just some sort of assistant imperialist.
"Sir! Sir!"
He also seems distracted, like something's coming over his comm link. So he holds up a hand to like make Merrick wait. He's trying to listen into his comm link and squints up and is annoyed that while trying to receive some important message, some runner is literally running him down, you know, screaming at him, trying to get his attention. The two distractions seem to be enough to make him forget about Merrick for the moment. And he turns and he's like, "What is it, Costez? I just hold on a second." Anyway, he literally turns his back on Merrick.
Yeah, Merrick takes his duffel bag and tries to sleight of hand it over to Rawl.
"Rawl, take this. Quick. No, shh. No questions. Just take it."
Brown just nods.
Okay, sleight of hand roll. Merrick, with one leg, does sort of a large circular motion with the bag and sweeps it out from in front of him, around behind him, and sort of shoots it with a flick as far in your direction, Rahl, as he can. Like, you know, a person and a half down. Not exactly to where you are, but...
Obviously getting his impression. This isn't my first rodeo. Before the thing even stops moving,
okay.
I'll sweep it in behind my suitcase.
Okay.
Would you like a roll?
Yeah, I'll have a stealth check from you if you try to do this, you know, on the sly. Now, you've been inspected and cleared. Now you've attached yourself verbally to Merrick.
Yeah, it worked.
Natural 20 on the dice. All right, so it's like you see him do it, and you've already got your case out. Shoot it out on its little caster leg, and sort of hook his and pull it in and tuck it to yours. Can I have an intelligence check, please, Mr. Rodeo? 17. It occurs to you that that's only half the battle. If the man does remember that he had a bag for him to open, he's probably going to look around for it. And the first person he's going to check is the man who said he works for you.
I'll take that bag and position it kind of not right beside me, more beside the person who was inspected before me.
Okay.
So I, you know, cover it up. He slides it down. I use my bag to cover it, and I slide it past me, but not so far past me that it's out of reach, but so it's more towards the person beside me than it is towards me.
Yeah, okay. So it's within reach, but if someone's going to be tagged by it, it's going to be the guy next to you, not you.
Yes.
Okay. Distracted, annoyed at his underling, and something's going on with the comm, he finally gives up trying to sort out whatever frantic message Carstairs is trying to give him. Luck is with you guys. Impatiently, the man hands the data pad to Carstairs, gives him a bunch of instructions, and goes marching off. And then you have sort of a bewildered underling who steps up to the line, and he's kind of trying to make sense of what's on the data pad, and he's looking up, and he's looking around at you guys. He goes up to Merrick. Little guy tries to puff himself up and says,
"Right. Hello, welcome to Zelzon Station. Do you have anything to declare today?" Are you...
And he makes... He kind of like lifts two fingers and gets Merrick to lean in and asks him a personal question. And you guys can literally... Like, it's so obvious what he's asking the guy. He does the stage whisper and he's like,
"Are you human?"
Correct.
"Yes, of course you are," he says, "because..."
And then again with the stage whisper, leaning in and holding up the hand against the side of his cheek flat.
"Because we have to inspect them all first. So if he's doing you, then were you the last one?"
Correct.
Okay, thank you. Right.
So he makes a couple notes or whatever and sidesteps Merrick and goes to like the next human. He looks at the list and down, like going down the list he's marked off, he scrolls back up and looks at Rahl, you know, the big guy, and says,
"You as well."
Waving you off.
"Well, thank you, sir. Have yourself a lovely day."
Okay.
And I kind of, you know, give Merrick an elbow to the upper thigh because that's where it sits. Okay. "Come on, big fella. We got people to see and places to do."
Okay. So random Corellian approaches you, Rahl, and, you know, gives you the tip of the hat that he saw what you did. Big smile, goes on his way.
Just give him a nod.
And we eventually
file his appearance away in my head as a possible ally to take advantage of in the future.
Somebody who won't rat you out. He was impressed.
Yeah, you gotta find your allies where you can in this day and age.
Disposable asset number one. All right, so you guys are slowly making your way up, bringing us back to the aliens. Now, young Carstairs here doesn't really seem to have a vicious bone in his body. You know, the guy's barely like 22, blonde hair, under his little cap of gray and everything, big smile, you know, that type of thing, and tries to be polite. But he changes his tone to try to be menacing because the Empire obviously are a little bit, have some anti-alien sentiments, right? But he doesn't pull it off very well. So it's almost cute when he says,
"Right then, the rest of you, come together, please, together."
And the three of you and two other aliens who have been waiting this entire time, some move up and you guys move left and right, shuffling together in this sort of like what looks now like a criminal lineup, all together. Two aliens you don't know And he goes up to the first alien, which is a Rodian, and he says,
"Right, what do you have to declare?"
And the Rodian,
"What? Oh, right."
Looks down.
"Open it up."
Anyway, he opens his bag, and anyway, he makes this, like, he takes time. He just makes the Rodian dump everything out, and all this guy really has is paperwork. He's got, like, some kind of attaché case, and...
business owner, huh? All right, well, let's see your light.
And he double-checks everything and just gives this guy a hard time. Everything is to the letter, but he certainly, you know, makes it inconvenient to the extreme for this poor Rodian who is going back over paperwork. He makes a double check. He runs numbers. He actually takes the time to enter the serial numbers slowly for everything about the Rodian in his data pad, then actually does the Wi-Fi and does a background check on the guy and all, you know, just slowing down this part of the customs to a crawl. And he's polite but very curt with the Rodian. And then finally also starts asking him personal questions.
"How long do you plan on staying on Zelzon Station? And what is your business here?"
You know, all this type of thing. Anyway, he finally gives him some sort of permit, and he has the audacity to tell him that he is...
"There are restricted areas on the station."
And, you know...
"There's a curfew on the promenade."
That he's supposed to, you know, adhere to, and all kinds of stuff that's obviously being thrown at him because he's an alien. And then he, like an idiot, explains to him like he's 5.
"Stay visible, follow this line. Every time you see a stormtrooper, step out, make sure they see you."
You know, all this type of thing.
"Our troopers are here for your protection," he says, and all this stuff.
And finally lets him go. And he comes along. Next alien line is Askeleth.
"Hello.
What do you have to declare?"
"What is it you wish me to declare?"
"Well, let's start with your name."
"My name is Askeleth."
"And what is your business on Zelzon Station?"
"I began my journey on a research tour. I'm working on a paper for a doctorate back home."
"On your home world?"
"Yes, my home world."
"Which is?"
"Arcania. Thank you."
"Right then,"
he says, pointing at your personal case that's got your computer, data pad, and everything, and your personal belongings.
"Open it up."
"Would you like a tour of modern science?" Opens it up, and you see lots and lots of research material, very minimalistic clothing.
Okay. He looks at you pointedly before he kneels down to rummage. And he leans down and he starts, you know, pulling stuff out, dropping it on the floor. He's not making a big mess and smashing anything, but he's certainly not trying to be neat and tidy. He takes your clothes out and dumps them and pokes at your vials, your personal stuff, your data pad, flips them over, tries to activate some stuff. "Do you carry anything that's interesting, weird, rare, valuable, that might catch the Empire's eye, that they might at least ask you about?"
"I do have some weapons."
"Tools? Okay, what have you got?"
I have a fire blade, which is actually a very common weapon, but sounds cool."
"Okay."
"Heavy blaster pistol, which I should have the document. I do have the documentation for if you need it."
"Now, the heavy blaster pistol is illegal, is it not?"
"No, it's, it requires the thing. It's restricted.
It's restricted, but not licensed.
But you can buy licensing for it. I think it was 1.8 times cost.
Because you're an alien, and because this is the Empire, right, he sees the heavy blaster pistol and immediately demands full documentation, double checks everything because it's a restricted item, then starts asking you personal questions, you know.
"Why do you need such a large, like, you know, such a heavy weapon for a personal sidearm?"
Grills you at every angle. Your paperwork, as you know, starting money spent, of course, checks out. He picks it up, looks it over. The ammunition, like the Eclipse for it, he takes. Lets you keep your weapon, but he takes.
Don't have any.
You don't have ammo for your weapon?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, I just have the weapon for now.
All right. So anyway, he takes the the last dispended Eclip. Right.
Puts his little speech about having weapons, such a heavy weapon on the ship, in a bit of a different perspective, doesn't it?
Yes.
Okay. Would he also be interested in it?
He takes what he actually believes is an Eclipse for it, and it isn't. It actually just like an energy cell for something else. And he's like, anyway, he holds it up to you, and he's like, you know, "You'll get these back at the Department of Weapon Registration when you leave the station." So he won't take your personal property as a weapon, but he's definitely going to take what he thinks is your ammo. And hassles you and asks your personal business.
What are you doing here on Zelzon Station? How long is your stay?
Well, I am traveling, as I said, working on a paper. I am working on a paper to determine, how do I describe this? It is difficult to understand many races, how many different types of creatures and aliens form romantic involvement with each other. I've decided to write a paper based on the different forms and see if there's a commonality.
Alright, the face he's making is priceless. He's either completely lost or somewhere into disgust when you actually add the romantic tone, and he just kind of suddenly shakes his head to clear the image of anything that might have popped in there, and he's...
Fine.
And then he tells you the Imperial rules.
Curfew, stay in view, blah, blah, blah.
And then he just leaves you to pack up. He doesn't even put it back together. Just like the Rodian, he just leaves you to pack up your own stuff and shuffles left.
I say out loud, oh, there's my contact lenses.
he suddenly stops as he looks down at his boots and then looks at you and just takes another step and kind of stomps a boot. And what's really annoying is he hasn't told the rest of you guys that you can go. He just went through your stuff and went to the next guy, as if he's going to like release you guys at once. You can all be watched or whatever. And then finally gets down to Poser Sham. And he just rudely stares at your cone head. Like he's trying to make eye contact because you have a humanoid face, but his eyes constantly flicker up to your cranium.
Name?
Poser Sham.
I see, Mr. Sham. And what do you have to declare today?
Looking down, looking, you know, at your case.
I guess my guitar.
Oh, you play an instrument.
He says, perking up. And then suddenly remembering himself, you know, as he's looking into your human face and then remembers your giant head and the fact that you are an alien, not classified as, or morally classified as a second-class citizen.
Right. Well, open it up. Let's have a look.
Okay. So, Poser very gingerly places his guitar case on the ground, pops open the locks, makes sure to be very hidden about the padlock on the front and the key code put in, plus the fingerprint scan on the side, opens it up, and it's a black painted with a red neck guitar, but is also a vibro axe. So...
Okay.
And he just kind of stands up there and just kind of raises an eyebrow towards the inspector.
Okay. First, he cranes his head like he's not, doesn't know what to make of it, because it could be a stage prop. You know what I mean? Like it could look like, you know, something that a musician uses, you know, like a stage prop. It's to look like a vital break, but doesn't actually. He cocks his head and he's looking at it, right? So anyway, you think he's about to like point out the fact that it's an actual vibro weapon and ask you to fire it up or take your clip or whatever, right? He points down.
Is that a Telecaster Galactic SG-4 Fenderius? That's got to be some kind of custom job.
He says, denoting like the sort of guts of an actual real guitar that you took and sort of, like I said, makeshift, had custom made for the actual Vibroblade with these serious modifications. But he seems to actually recognize the original instrument, and he nailed it.
I'm surprised to see another... fan of music and exact typing of the guitar. Especially, yes, you are quite right. I'm impressed.
Shame the only way to get it to stick to the blade is, like, by welding it. Does it distort the sound much?
It does a little bit, but not as much as you would think. I do my own handiwork on it. I actually modified it myself.
He kind of looks left and right. He says,
I'll tell you what, something like this I'm supposed to take from you, but...
So he says,
if you meet me at Gundark's Cantina tonight and light it up and let me hear it, maybe even let me play it, I'll let you hang on to it for now.
Deal.
Right on, he says, holding up two fingers in the complete wrong way for like an enthusiast.
He tries to give the forks, but he gives the spoon instead.
So, yeah, exactly. Anyway, so he quickly motions for you to hurry up and like put that away before anyone sees it type of thing, and then loudly says,
right. Well, the Empire has no use for any of your personal garbage. Make sure that stays in there.
He says, big wink at you, but you know, saying it loudly.
All right.
Looking at you.
I suppose I'll do.
he says.
You may all go now.
Still eyeballing and nodding and double winking at Poser. So, finally released from your horrid, faded yellow line cage, gentlemen. You may now proceed. And he has stalled you enough. You know, the humanoid line has pretty much died right down to the last two or three people as you guys can catch up and start mulling in with the aliens that are coming across.
And as you guys roam around and take in the promenade, also notice is a place called Douglas Medical Supplies, which is sort of a clinic as well as an actual supply. And the Credit Chip is a local casino. And as you guys roam around and take in the promenade, Mechanical Allies is the name of a droid repair shop, is run by a non-human that hasn't yet been shut down by the Empire, a Twi'lek named San. Let's start with Dr. Askeleth. Inside, you find all manner of droid parts, reconditioned droids, tools, attachments, and yes, even subsequent, you know, supplies, but most are droid related. However, you might be able to find a reasonable power cell or something that you could rig. You know, it would be meant for a droid, but you could probably rig it or use it with your equipment since yours has been absconded. As you stand inside the doorway, you are happy to see that it is operated by a near human. A Twi'lek stands behind the counter. He is currently dealing with a customer before you, mulling around his wares in the shop. What do you do?
I will start by examining the droids that he has for sale.
All right. There is mostly parts, but he does have one intact reconditioned protocol droid. And then he has half a dozen astromech droids, all in varying degrees of reconditioned state. Some appear to be in good shape. Some look like they've actually had blaster scoring that's been scrubbed off and worn the exterior panels down. Some look like they haven't been completely put back together. One's even standing on a recharge stand in a corner. All are deactivated.
Do I know which types they are, or like all the same?
Some are older. The newest looking, as far as you know, series may have a knowledge technology role, please. The most reliable, most popular, and shall we say modern, like these are not exactly brand new, but the series, you know, has been brought out and already proved itself space worthy, is there are three R series droids, a few others in the series, but there's one that seems to sort of speak to you, an R4 unit. Maybe it's the coloring, perhaps it's the fact that the sensors or attachments that are sort of been opened. Now, even though these droids are deactivated, he's had them sort of open up their hatches and show some of their extendable arms and attachments or whatever to like to show what they have, what they can do, as opposed to just turning them on and asking the droid to, like, you know, lift its skirt, as it were. It's as if he's got the hood popped on some of these models, you know what I mean? So you can see some of the attachments or whatever.
Yeah.
One particular R4 droid actually has like two pincer claws and a periscope, the probe scope, for computer use, but, you know, actual, I wouldn't say hands, but you know what I mean, fine clamp digits where it can actually grab, manipulate, turn, you know, fine objects kind of thing, besides its stubby little motorized legs that it rolls around on. And it would probably be, with your knowledge technology 25, one of the R series, one of the three out of the six would be your best bet.
Okay, then I will, at this point, I guess, go,
nodding goodbye towards the customer that he just dealt with, and he comes right for you. His head tails wrapped in black leather strips behind his dark apron.
Well, hello there, my good friend. Sans the name, and Droid Repair and Sales is my game. How are you today?
And sticks out a blue hand.
A bit perturbed, but it's been worse before, so it will be better again later, I suppose. How much for this droid?
Ah, excellent choice, sir.
He says, smiling, revealing his pointed teeth.
Ah, the R series. Was there a particular use for a droid you're after? The Astromech series does cover them all. Well, except for our obvious protocol. I mean, who wants to listen to a bunch of bleeping and such in binary? You know, you can't have dinner parties.
He says, his pointed little teeth, smiling.
No, I happen to quite enjoy binary.
This R4 unit actually is, shall we say, the finest of the line. Note the extra attachments and periscope for direct computer interface. No need for keyboards here, sir. Also, mechanical attachments for fine-tuning. The R-Series, as you know, has basic programming for mechanical manipulation, computer use, as well as, I believe this one may actually have a sub-program that I could reinstall for you for piloting.
At any rate, I would need this droid for, well, in the immediate sense, I would need it to help me with some of my load. Beyond that, I would need it for assistance in the lab, in lab work. So, for example, utilizing the computer and programming systems for me, welding various basic pieces together. Just the kinds of things that I can't, that I don't quite have time to do while I'm busy researching.
A researcher? Of course! Why, I don't see any reason why an astromech would make a fine assistant, huh?
He's just slapping you on the back.
I'll tell you what. Since this particular R4 has caught your eye, how would you like to meet him, eh?
And he reaches in behind and he just gently pushes back, like retracts the, you know, the armatures and everything. And he says,
have you been on the station long?
Reaching and unplugging a couple couplings that are behind him plugged into the wall.
No, I had the misfortune of arriving just today.
Oh, well, I say today is your lucky day.
My accent is just all over the place, this guy. Have to re-edit everything he says. He gets him fired up. The head spins once, twice, and then stops quickly and shuttles back, and the little optical knobs focus in and around and look all over the place, and it swivels its head, looking at the gentleman standing over him, and bleeps, and swivels and looks at you, and bleeps, and back and so on and so. And he says,
this little guy is one of the finest I have in my shop, or my name isn't San Delarega. R4, show your new master what you can do. Please, issue him a command. He will hop to it.
Please find the hidden file on this datapad. There should be two. Find at least one of them for me.
The R4 unit hesitates and turns and bleeps towards San. Now, you said you actually speak binary?
I do.
R4 indicates that you're not his master, that San's his master.
Yes, yes. No, I know. I'm your master currently. He says, but the gentleman may wish to purchase you, which would make him your new master. And if you would like to get out of the shop and see the rest of the galaxy, R4...
He says, smiling, and he sort of grits his teeth. He says,
do what the man says.
I certainly appreciate his literal interpretation of the rules.
So R4 hops to, a little buzz and a whistle, and pops open his little auxiliary hatches, and little pincer hands come out, clasping eagerly.
I hand it to it.
Okay. He takes it. Out comes another attachment. This one looks like a flat claw with a needle in the center, and there's like a little electrical spark in between, and he makes the claw very flat, and he gently sort of sticks it in the side USB port of your datapad, and then he, again, the head spins around twice 360 in one direction, and then one back in the other, and he starts beeping and whirling excitedly. He proclaims in binary.
Wow, you've got a lot of stuff on here. This is gonna take me a minute.
Well, do your best.
What is this, Arcadian University Females Go Wild? Strange title.
Anyway, so he gets around to, after making a couple of comments about some of the titles that he doesn't understand or, you know, makes comments upon, comes down to doing what you said, performs
Excellent.
The task, and then unplugs himself and hands the pad back to you.
Excellent. Thank you. Now, before we discuss pricing, there is one more thing I would be interested in. I've noticed that the R4 units do not tend to have much in the way of recording. That would be very helpful for me in that I would be able to then record experimentation.
You mean like a holocam?
I do not need a holographic rendition. I just need a simple video feed should suffice.
There's ports and storage and docking within the droid in the R series and the Astromech series that will hold, you know, additional software, hard drives, attachments. So with that integrated hardware upgrade, parts, labor, and considering the attachments that he already has that are after market value, I suppose I could let you have him since you get along so well for
3,000, yes?
Yes.
That is acceptable.
R2 looks at you, spins his head, looks at San, looks back, and goes... and says...
I'm worth it, but he'll go lower.
Ah, that's enough out of you. I have to close shop for an entire day to work on you for the gentleman's upgrade. Stay out of this.
And he leans over and, like, you know, shuts him off, and the droid goes... and slows down and goes, he'll go lower, but I'm so worried.
The droid does have a point. You mentioned a possibility of adding piloting systems as well. Or reactivating something along those lines, were you not? Or did you not?
Yes.
At 3,000 credits, perhaps you could throw in a power pack of some sort. The customs officer confiscated the power pack that I needed to use for my data pad, as you can see.
I see.
It is only a matter of time before I'm out.
Really?
San says rather flatly. Can I have a persuasion roll, sir? Now, I was looking up persuasion because it's going to come into play to possibly avoid and schmooze NPCs. And what you guys have to do is make a persuasion check that beats your target's willpower. However, it's a lovely little chart where the target's perception of you, do they think they have the upper hand or not, gives you bonuses or penalties, which can basically just tack on to the guy's willpower defense and, you know, up and down the DC for of your roll. So, may I have a persuasion check from you, sir?
Yes, I'm getting to that.
To get what you want?
I just can't remember. Is it persuasion or the... Oh, no, it is persuasion I can use intelligence for. Okay, good. I have that set up.
Persuasion is charisma normally. Do you have a trait or a feat for your...
Yes, being Acadian, my race is so well known for our logic use around the galaxy that we can use intelligence as opposed to our charisma.
Oh, okay. That's neat. That's like a racial trait for your character, eh? 9.
Really?
He says flatly.
I suppose you want me to throw in a mind wipe, too.
A mind wipe? No, absolutely not. The droid has a wonderful personality so far. It certainly helped me.
Mm-hmm.
There's that little bing-bong as someone breaks the perimeter of his open air shop. He says,
well, I'll let you think about it, but the deal is as it stands, and excuse me, I have other customers.
And he goes and serves somebody else while you ponder that, you know, take it or leave it type of comment with your persuasion roll of 9. Does not seem to sway him to add a power pack to the deal. So, while you are pondering, let's switch to the boys in the alley. Poser, you're enjoying drinks, and though there are a few near humans and aliens in this bar, you get the distinct feeling that they are sort of shunned a little bit. Service still is better and faster to the humans than they get around to you. You know, some of the waitresses neglect you. Rawl and Merrick, what are you guys doing strolling around the promenade?
Looking for a place where we can find some privacy so we can finally go through the bag and count our creds and divvy up the spoils so far and discuss our next move.
All right. Allow me to quickly...
Montage?
No. back in the day, when I played D6 Star Wars under a different DM, we were comparing my knowledge of D&D to his knowledge of Star Wars and, you know, what the rule books promoted, giving characters a break, moving the story along, you know, that type of thing. I was interested in a different system. And he would just smile and shake his head and say,
never let them rest.
That was the one rule in Star Wars. So, with one player calling for a rest, I feel obligated to follow in the old Star Wars tradition and move us along to our first interesting happening, shall we say. The scene. The promenade is filled with the bustle and revelry of commerce. Spilling out of the gambling halls are the sounds of victory and moans of defeat, while the music of local bands issue from the cantinas. Only a handful of citizens mill about in the main areas of the promenade, a few gazing out the massive windows at the planet Brenthal hovering below. business people hawk their wares to the passerby, and a few Imperial stormtroopers make their way down the main avenue of the promenade on their usual patrol at a leisurely pace. What the players are looking at is a representation of the promenade. In the actual module, the promenade, or the
battle
map, is actually quite small. And what I've done is I've cloned it and lengthened it to represent Sandpox's version of the entire promenade, so the players don't feel that, you know, they're getting stoned into what's about to happen. So what I'm going to do here is I'm just going to place you guys as you were, sitting out in the middle. We have Raul and Merrick quite literally in the open, looking around, trying to find a spot to count their ill-gotten gains, I guess. Well,
the collection of debts owed to me, yes. I prefer to think of it as.
Okay. So what you guys are...
And of course, payment for services rendered to good Sir Merrick.
There you go.
Yeah, of course.
All right. So as you can see, I have placed you guys in the middle of the promenade looking around. On the south of the map, just inside a doorway, represents Askeleth in his droid shop. And at the top of the map, in a narrow doorway, represents Poser Sham, who is beyond the doorway, sitting in a cantina, but all sort of on the same map, as it were, even though technically two characters are slightly off the map. And now things get interesting. There's not a lot of people out here, but looking around, you see at the far end of the promenade, two men in civilian clothes. Merrick, you notice that these guys are packing. They're wearing civilian clothes, but they're not doing very well in concealing their holdout blasters. So you have two civilians, as it were, dead ahead, packing. And they were taking your notice while you and Raul were, you know, deciding where to go, possibly even about to mention it to them. Both you guys know about the stormtroopers that are behind you at the other end, just leisurely wandering around, you know, doing a regular patrol. Suddenly, coming out of a doorway, wearing what seems to be engineer's clothing, a woman who is obviously badly wounded, like she's been in a few, you know, like been in some kind of firefight. And immediately, the two men that were standing in the middle of the promenade start moving towards her, clutching her side, looks left, looks right. She sees you two in the center of the promenade and comes stumbling out towards you guys and calls out to you.
Help me, please. They're
nervously looking back at the two men.
Just help me, please. There's credits in it for you.
Roll for initiative, gentlemen. And I'll have the auxiliary players roll as well.
Bam.
I just realized what my hit points are.
You're out in the middle.
Hard 20.
All right.
Well, the advantage of partying with someone who's considered larger size is that you're always walking with cover.
That's true. And that's exactly what I would do. I would totally just jump right behind him. Just hold
you're doing good.
Hold a couple E-clips so I can help you with your quick reloads and my blaster pistol in one hand, you know? Get Sasha ready.
Do not touch your referee.
You are listening to Rollmongers, Star Wars Sega, Dawn of Defiance actual play podcast.
And they say,
"Stop! Move away from that woman! She's wanted by the Empire! She's under arrest by the Empire! I can't find the page with my lines on it, so we're ad-libbing through speed. It's terrible. We're not really actors."
"Then you don't have anything new. Thank you."
"Thermonuclear detonation imminent."